Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harris. Brought to you by Poker Stars and the Poker Players Alliance.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You got it.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Jackpot.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
If you ever wondered what poker players do on a day where the temperature is supposed to get over 100 degrees in St. Louis, the answer is they head for a nice air-conditioned poker room. I'm at table two of Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room right now, where there are five live games going on, but a tournament today that drew over 80 people. I think there are 85 people in the 1 o'clock event. They're all in here playing like crazy behind me. Meanwhile, my partner, Dennis Phillips, is once again in the place that is no stranger to heat, back in Las Vegas. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
Doing great, Paul. Yeah, it's a little warm out here, I have to admit. Although it was 115, I think, one time. It's not that hot now.
You just had a 24-hour trip to Bristol, Connecticut, I understand, to do some stuff for ESPN. What was that?
I shot the inside deal that's going to be up this week. Did it with Bernard Lee, our friend. Had a good episode there. Did a few other interviews. But it was a flying trip. I left Sunday, flew from Vegas to Bristol, Connecticut, and then Monday taped all the shows. We started at 7 that morning, and then I flew back last night, got in at like midnight last night back to Vegas.
And you'll be in Vegas for a few more days before coming home?
I'll be here for a couple more days, and I'm heading to St. Louis, yes.
Wow.
I'll be there over the weekend. So, well, it's been a whirlwind again, like usual.
Yeah.
But it was a great show we did. People ought to check it out. Go to ESPN and go on their major page and just look for the inside deal.
Mm-hmm.
And pop it up. We had John Pappas on there, who is in Washington. He is the head of the PPA, and we discussed the bill and the amendments and everything that's going on in Washington and what we can do to keep pushing it and what the ramifications of the bill as it exists now are.
Well, you know what?
Let's
get right into that. We do have a guest later on in the hour, Gavin Smith, one of the most popular poker pros in America, in North America. He's Canadian, actually, but just a great guy who finally won his first World Series of Poker bracelet this summer, and we'll spend a half hour with him later on in the show. And I also want to talk a little bit about my week last week in Tunica, Mississippi, at the World Poker Open, which is run by our buddy Ken Lambert, who runs that, and the Beau Rivage in Biloxi, and both states. Places you can drive to if you like having huge splattered bugs on your windshield. I had to stop.
Boy, that's really good.
I had to stop twice on the way home to pull into a gas station to squeegee off the windshield because the bugs were out like crazy. But by the way, the short version of my trip is four tournaments, no cashes. Came home a day early, didn't play the main. But let's talk about the bill, because we have been talking so much this year about it, and our sponsor, the Poker Players Alliance, has been pushing this so much. H.R. 2267, the Internet Gambling Regulation, Consumer Protection, and Enforcement Act, was marked up last Wednesday. This is the congressional committee that is chaired by Barney Frank, and it finally did pass the committee. After all the markups last week, by an overwhelming margin, 41
yes.
to 22. Now, you said that you spent some of yesterday with John Pappas of the PPA. What did he tell you about this?
Well, we talked about it on air and off air, and there were a number of things that he brought up that were very interesting. He agreed with me that Barney had said earlier that he wouldn't bring it out of committee unless he was pretty sure we could get it through the House. The version that's there now will change. There are several amendments being proposed right now. There's some changings in the wording. A variety of different things are going to go there. Majority of the amendments that were put in there right now were for consumer protection, and I have no problem with those. They were trying to ensure that people wouldn't get in trouble, that underage people wouldn't be playing, that there were some guidelines in there so people didn't go in there and could just immediately lose their entire net worth type deal. So there's some consumer protection items in there, which I do like. There's another wording in it that I think will need to be changed. But it, and I can't quote it verbatim, but it's basically anybody who has been operating illegally at the present time would not be allowed a license underneath this bill.
Yeah, I actually have some details on that, Dennis. This is an amendment that was proposed by a congressman from California named Brad Sherman, and it essentially says sites that have intentionally broken internet gaming laws cannot get a license to conduct business in the United States. In other words, if this bill goes through and is passed, sites that are deemed to have intentionally broken the law would not be able to get the licenses that would be handed out. Now, I'm sure what they're talking about here is targeting PokerStars and Full Tilt Poker and Ultimate Bet and Doyle's Room and other online sites that have been allowing U.S. players to play. Now, I know that you are tight with the people at PokerStars. I know you don't speak for them in this case, but are they looking at this as something that is going to stop them from being part of online poker in America once this bill gets passed?
Absolutely not. Number one, quite simply, the regulations that went into effect in 06 were banking regulations about the transfers of funds. In PokerStars' opinion, they have never operated illegally, and they have actually relished the chance to get to a court to try to prove that it wasn't, but that's never happened. There's still, you have a huge gray area there. Their statement is quite simple. You can put that wording in there if you want. It doesn't mean anything because it doesn't apply to us. We have always been fully governed, fully regulated. We operate under the guidelines of the Isle of Man. Our books are open and complete. We run a tight security system. It's right here. We're an open book. We have no problems whatsoever with it. We think we are operating totally legally. And you would have to prove to us that we're not, which I don't think they can do. That being said, I don't think that wording is going to be included in the final bill anyhow. I think there'll be some changes put into it in a variety of options, and we've got several different people working in that right now. But the people that have been pushing for this, people that have been the heavy supporters for the PPA, the ones that want and have asked for the government regulation, are not the ones you're going to exclude from the bill.
Right. I would think that that's the Stars and Tilt and the others would probably argue, you know, if you want to keep people out who were doing business illegally, that's fine. We've never been convicted of a crime. Nobody's even charged us with a crime here.
Correct.
So how are you going to exclude us and say that we were doing something illegal if you never stopped us from doing it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's right there. And it's not like people were operating, you know, unknown or some sort of clandestine type thing.
Right.
This is wide out and in the open. Here we are.
Yeah.
This is how you contact us. Here's our phone number. Call us.
Yeah. PokerStars is not exactly an underground site.
Not hardly.
All right. Well, that was one obstacle I wanted to ask you about. And I know that was an amendment that Sherman of California proposed, and it did pass by a voice vote. Let me go over a couple of the other amendments that were in here. A Republican from New York named Peter King proposed that the internet gambling not include sports betting. And when they do that, of course, they exclude horse racing, which you can bet on online right now. And, you know, the horse racing lobby is pretty strong in Washington, and they've always been pushing to keep their stuff legal. But I guess it's the NFL and Major League Baseball and the NBA and the NHL and all the other professional sports teams want to make sure that if you do allow internet gambling, you can't have an online bookie. There are plenty of those offshore right now, but they don't want to allow that to come stateside. I don't think any of the poker sites would have a problem with that. Do you?
Oh, you're absolutely right. I think you've nailed it right there. Again, the NFL, the NHL, all the rest of them do not want this to be a portion of the bill, and I don't think it should be. This is a game of skill, has absolutely nothing to do with that aspect. When Peter King brought that forward, it was with the blessing of the PPA and all the online sites. So, yes, that's a very good amendment, and the way the bill stands with that amendment, I would support 100%.
Okay. Another one from California, Congressman John Campbell put in an amendment that had several provisions, one of which was that all the facilities of the licensees that accept wagers in the U.S. actually be located in the U.S. Does that mean that PokerStars, if it were to become an American licensee, would have to move its servers from the Isle of Man and have personnel here in the United States?
again, that's open to interpretation. It does not mean they would have to move their servers over here. What it may mean that there would have to be a presence and a company in existence within the borders of the U.S. But you can't tell any of the other global companies right now that you can only operate out of the U.S. PokerStars does business in countries, in over 100 countries around the world.
Right.
There's no way they can bring any kind of an enforcement that way. They can ask that you have a physical presence and you know, some brick and mortar type buildings in the U.S. You know, and that may be what he meant there. But he's not going to say, "Oh, wait, all your operations from Costa Rica and Isle of Man and everything have to be moved to the U.S."
And nothing
they can't
in this,
and would not do that.
And nothing in this bill would make it so that when you played on Stars or Tilt or UB, that you were only playing against Americans. It would still be worldwide online poker. Correct.
Correct. Very correct. And that is a good point. There have been a couple of other countries, Italy and France, that have tried to put the sort of artificial borders and keep their players with, so that you can only play people from within that country. I think that's a mistake. And I think that those laws will be changed. But right now, if you're an Italian player and you play on PokerStars, you will only be playing against other Italian players.
Right. All right. Another
and,
part.
By the way, just to reemphasize this, PokerStars' stance is that we will obey whatever regulations you put out there. If they would put a clause in there to say you can only play against U.S. players, that is what PokerStars would do. They might work to change it, but they would honor and obey those laws.
Another part of Campbell's amendment was that the sites have to provide loss limits for each bettor. Now, those are two words that make the hair on the back of any Missouri resident stand up, because we, of course, had those ridiculous loss limits where you would go into a casino here and only be able to buy in for $500 within every two-hour window. I don't think that that's what that means on here, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dennis. I think what this would be is you as a player would be allowed to set your own loss limits online, not the site telling you how much you could play, because, you know, somebody who plays micro stakes of a nickel or dime or even a dollar and $2 wouldn't be quite the same buy-in as somebody who plays, you know, like you play 10 and a quarter or 25-50 or Daniel Negreanu's 100-200 game.
Correct, yeah, and I think that, again, there's so much gray area here. The bills were introduced, but they have to be interpreted now. We have to make sure that what the people meant to put down there is actually what's legally being said. And that being the case, I hope your interpretation is the right one. I hope that they're not trying to put some sort of a loss limit nationwide on people, because I think that would be a huge mistake to do.
Yeah. There's another amendment that was put in here which says you can't gamble with your credit cards. You could use a prepaid card, you could use a debit card, but you couldn't use a credit card, which would essentially be the same as it works in brick-and-mortar casinos. You can't come in here to Harrah's St. Louis and get chips on your credit card.
They, what they do is they don't want people borrowing money to play. That's the philosophy behind it. Whether
right.
it's right or wrong, I'm not going to get to argue. But if you have the money and you have it in your pocket or you have it on your debit card, then, you know, there you go. You can get it and put the money down. But you're right. Right now, if you walked into Harrah's in St. Louis and say, "Here's my credit card, run me a tab," ain't going to happen.
Yeah, you could get a cash advance, but you could not get it as
as
credit. And then one other amendment I have to mention here from Congressman Michelle Bachmann of Minnesota. Internet sites would be forbidden from allowing people who are delinquent on child support from gambling on their site. I have no idea how Stars and Full Tilt and the others would know who has to pay child support and who doesn't. And I'm pretty sure that the government isn't going to give them a full list and say, ban these people.
In theory, it's not a bad amendment, but in actuality, I agree with you. I have no clue how you could make that a factual thing.
All right, now let's talk about the timeline of where things go here now, because the House is going on recess in a week. They're going on their August recess. They go away, and they don't come back until a week after Labor Day. And then they're only back in Washington for a couple of weeks before they adjourn for election season. So
yes.
Do you think that this bill, plus whatever has to happen in the Senate, can happen in the next 2 months, considering they're going to be out of there for 5 weeks in the middle of that?
You would love for that to happen. It's probably not. This is my scenario, what will probably happen. Just to remind everybody that's listening, too, it's come out of the committee now, but it has to go in front of the full House, has to be debated there, has to have the amendments and everything taken care of, and then has to be passed by the whole House. The same process has to start in the Senate. which it has not been introduced into yet. And then what happens is you have a bill in the House and a bill in the Senate, and they don't totally agree. So you have to then form a committee of the different members from the two different groups. They have to put a compromise bill together so that the versions, version A and version B from the House and the Senate then are combined, and you come up with version C, which is a combination of the two. But because it has changed, it has to go back to the House, and it has to go back to the Senate and be reapproved in its final phases. And then that has to go on up the chain of command to President Obama. So there's an awful lot of things going on here. That's not going to happen in the next 2 months.
If I were a betting man, and it turns out I am, I would say you're at least at least a year away from passage of 2267.
I would hope we could do it less than that, but that's probably not a bad estimate. There's going to be a lot that can be done during the lame duck session, during that session when the people that have been elected are not taking office, and the ones that have been in there for the last several years are still running the show. That's a time where you can get something out of the Senate. That's the time where possibly you can get these bills in front of both the House and the Senate and get the open debates going. I would hope that they would move forward to a heck of a lot during those months over the winter. That's my goal.
I would hope so, too, and we'll certainly keep you posted. And if you really want to know what's going on, you can go to theppa.org. That's the Poker Players Alliance website, theppa.org. Or make a micro contribution of 99 cents by downloading the PPA's iPhone app or iPad app, whichever one you want, and you can keep up to date with the poker news through that. If you want to become a member, we'd sure love to have you as members, as Dennis and I are. That's as little as $20 to join up, and you support the people who are really behind pushing this legislation more than anyone else, the Poker Players Alliance. And keep an eye out on ESPN.com for this week's edition of The Inside Deal, where Dennis talks with John Pappas of the PPA even more about this with Bernard Lee and the rest of the folks on that show. A couple of quick notes here. TV Poker, ESPN debuted the 50K Poker Players Championship with the Grinder winning it last week, Michael Mizrachi. I didn't realize how lucky he had to get to beat Shemalev. The heads-up battle there came down to a couple of big suckouts. I do like one of the things that they've added this year, which is on the screen, they are now putting the players' position at the table. They've got UTG for under the gun and cut for the cutoff, or HJ for the hijack seat, along with the button and the small blind and the big blind. I like that. As much as we complain about TV screens getting cluttered, they have found a way. The people at 441 Productions, who do this for ESPN, have found a way to still make it look very, very clean. And, of course, Norman and Lon, I love them doing the play-by-play and the commentary. Have you seen last week's show yet?
I saw excerpts out of it and of the different hands. I've never watched the whole show. We did discuss some of that while I was over there in Connecticut. Kind of privately and even on the air on the Inside Deal, we discussed one of the hands that the Grinder had, the one where he laid down his set of nines.
Yeah. That was a remarkable hand. Just quickly, we've only got 30 seconds here. Can you see yourself in that situation playing it the way he did?
Actually, I might have played a little different But when it came down to the end where he made the $500,000 bet, I hate to admit it, but I think I would have folded too. And I think he was counting on the Grinder being that good of a player.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of lesser players would have called there. But the Grinder, with the table image that gentleman had, which was extremely tight, with the chip stack that he had, where he was one of the shorter ones, for him to put that kind of a bet on the river, you had to almost guarantee that he had the straight, that he had a monster.
Yep. And I guess Grinder took the attitude.
I would lay it down.
Yeah, I think Grinder took the attitude, I'll lay this down and wait for a better spot. And, of course, he got it in worse spots later on, but still ended up winning the whole thing. Tonight on ESPN, they have the Tournament of Champions, which we know Howard Lederer talked about on this show a couple of weeks ago. Yep. He got head-to-head with Huck Seed at the end before Huck took the whole thing down. By the way, if you missed our interview with Howard Lederer, you can get the podcast on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. Next week, they begin coverage of the main event. Also next week, the big game returns to some Fox TV stations around the country. Personally, I watch it on my computer on PokerStars.tv. And also next week, Phil Hellmuth tweeted last night that he and Robert Williamson III will be on the Discovery Channel show Cash Cab. which apparently filmed a bunch of episodes on the Vegas Strip, and he and Robert got in the cab, and he tweeted that they did poorly on the show. That is supposed to air next Monday night. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we'll come back with our extended conversation with Gavin Smith, who picked up his first ever WSOP bracelet this summer. But first, this portion of the show is brought to you by PokerStars.net.
Yeah, PokerStars, again, this is the site that I play at, and there's exciting news. The WCOOP, the World Championship of Online Poker, is starting up on September 5th. It's going to be monstrous. You can go to PokerStars.net, download it, and start playing, and you can play for free and qualify to play some of the biggest tournaments you will ever see online. So not only now can you qualify to go to Australia, to go to Europe, to go to Latin America, you can qualify for their WCOOP events, which is just monstrous. You guys got to check this out. Go to PokerStars.net. Just if you want to play poker and you want to play it seriously, it's a great place to go, great place to learn, great place to have some fun.
We're back in a moment with more of The Final Table. He's Dennis Phillips. I'm Paul Harris. We're live from Harrah's St. Louis on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com, and our podcasts on thechipleader.com.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, the only show in St. Louis with a poker millionaire. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host Paul Harris on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
And we're happy to welcome now to The Final Table probably one of the most popular bracelet winners of the 2010 World Series of Poker, a man who had been trying to get the gold for a long time and finally picked it up this year in a mixed event, no limit and limit hold'em. Gavin Smith joins us here at The Final Table. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I think actually your popularity when you win a bracelet is gauged by how many people you owe money to. And I think that was probably why I was number one.
You did have a lot of pros who were extremely happy for you, though. I mean, that was...
When you have an entourage, follow you to the cage.
Right? Hey, yeah.
There you go.
Like seriously, like Lane Flack will be the most popular bracelet winner of all time.
So where is the bracelet?
The bracelet right now is at home, but it won't be there for long. I'm going to give it to my brother.
Oh, okay.
Why?
I think it'll mean more to him. It's about winning the bracelet. It's not about having the bracelet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and my brother's my biggest fan type thing, and I think that I think it'll mean something for him to have hanging on his mantelpiece. You know, I figure maybe I got a shot at winning another one.
Yeah, actually, I think you probably do. But that actually is something a little bit of a different question. A guy was talking to me the other day, and he says bracelets are nice and they're symbolic of it. But when you win one, what the heck do you do with it? Chris Moneymaker has sat in a dresser drawer for several years. I mean, people don't. He says, why don't
TJ Kluge's went to a pawn shop?
Yeah, there you go.
That's right.
But he was saying, why don't you make it something functional? Make it a bracelet / watch that people can then watch, and they don't appear to be ostentatious or anything like that, and they can show it around and actually promote it a little bit.
Well, years ago, in 1999, when I won my first tournament at Foxwoods, they always did give, and I believe they probably still do, give a leather jacket for every time you win a tournament. And it's a nice leather jacket.
Yeah, okay, cool.
I actually enjoy my leather jacket. But when you're there at the tournament, I used to go, and I'd be there for like the whole month of tournaments. And when you're there, a lot of people will win the tournament, and the next day they'll walk around in their leather jacket.
Yeah.
And I always thought they looked like geeks.
Yeah.
So I in 1999, I made a promise to myself that I would never wear a poker trophy.
Okay.
And World Series bracelet, it's the same thing. It's a poker trophy.
But that's what I'm saying here. Right now, it's just a trophy. You wear it, then are you showing off? You're being ostentatious, blah, 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 just like you were saying. But if it's actual something functional, if it's a watch that you can wear in the combination, you have an excuse to wear it, and you show it off a little bit. But, you are actually, it's got a function.
Maybe in your case, Gavin, they should make it World Series of Poker underwear. That way you could wear it but not be ostentatious at
right.
the same time.
I think that you guys, seriously, if you want me to be a guest on your radio show, you got to talk down to my level because I don't even know what the heck ostentatious means.
Okay. Let's talk about the event you won it. Limit and no limit mixed. You probably had an advantage over the other guys at that final table because you're such a terrific limit player. Did you play it that way?
I'm not a terrific limit player. I used to play limit for a living, actually. But
that's what I mean. You've got much more history than these guys probably did.
Right. Yeah. I felt that limit at limit hold'em at that tournament was where everyone made the biggest mistakes. I really thought, especially at the final table, I thought these guys were making mistakes. Basically, the limits were so high, you really had to tighten it up a lot, because if you were 3-betting like with garbage, which a lot of these guys were doing, before you find out your hand's no good, before you find out your hand's no good or your bluff's not going to work or whatever, whichever way it goes, you've now invested so many chips into running this bluff. Whereas in No Limit, you didn't have to do that. No Limit, you know, you can just sort of find out right away with your pre-flop bet. And, you know, if somebody comes over the top, you throw it away. And if not, you win the chips or whatever. But in Limit, if you 3-bet, the person always calls.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you never see a person raise and fold for one more bet.
Right.
So if you 3-bet, they always call. That means you're going to have to invest that money, and you're going to have to make another bet at some point in this hand to win this pot, at least. And you have to put so many chips out. And what was happening was people were like 3-betting like rag aces a lot. That was the biggest mistake I saw a lot. They were like 3-betting with like ace four. And I was like, I wouldn't even dream of playing this hand right now, you know? And they were doing a lot, and I thought they got into a lot of trouble because of that. And whereas I played really tight in Limit and chipped up just about every level.
Mm-hmm. Sweet.
When they do a mixed event like that, is it round for round? So you're playing once around the table Limit, once around the table?
No, it's 30 minutes of each game.
Okay. So you've got a half hour in which you really have an edge on the table. Are you then pulling back for the other half hour?
No, I mean, I guess, you know, not to sound cocky, which is always followed with a very cocky comment. I felt like I had a pretty big edge in No Limit too, so I wasn't really pulling back there. I felt like I was the best player at the table, but I often feel that way, you know. And I think you have to if you're gonna be in this business.
There's nothing wrong with that.
I think there should have been 9 of us feel like we were the best player at that table.
Sure.
So I wasn't looking to shy away in No Limit situations or in Limit situations. I was looking to pound what I conceived to be my edge as hard as I could.
Mm-hmm. And is there any time at that final table where you let the thought creep into your mind, I'm going to win my first bracelet, even if you didn't do it in a sing-song style like that?
I did actually sing it. No. Right near the end, I won a very huge pot off Danny, where I was happy. I was actually really happy. It was the hand I was happiest about the way I played, actually, because I got value out of I'd flopped a pair of eights and I check-raised. And then I bet again when a 10 came, and I bet again when a king came. So I got, in Limit Hold'em, and then I got called in both streets. And I was, you know, confident my hand was good. So I was really happy that I got all that extra value out of that hand where a lot of people probably wouldn't have. At that point, he was down to less than 2 bets. And it was obvious to me I was going to win. I didn't know what, barring, like, a really freak occurrence, I was going to win this tournament. So, I mean, I folded my next blind, and then I think the next hand maybe went in. So I maybe had, like, a minute or 2 minutes there, where I was sort of thinking about it. And I looked around behind me. And at this point, I really had been so focused on the table, I didn't realize what was going on, like, in the crowd and whatnot. And I turned around and was completely overwhelmed. It was, like, it was literally standing in the room. Like, there were so many people there. I was like, holy crap. Do I know this many people? But I didn't. No. So, yeah, so I had a chance to think about that. And I thought a little bit about my dad and how much he would have liked to have been there. And so it was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, when you're playing there and you're concentrating so much, you sometimes just lose focus of anything but the felt. And I've had a couple of different times where suddenly somebody makes a noise behind you and you almost jump like, oh, yeah, there are people in the room.
Right, right.
You look around there. It's kind of a weird feeling, isn't it?
This one was unbelievable. I'm like, how did these guys all get here without me hearing this?
Yeah, I mean,
there's like, you know, probably like 300-400 people or something there. It was a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Let's talk about your buddy Joe Seebach. And why he doesn't have your face on his body yet. And I mean that in the nicest possible way. We have talked to him twice this year.
You really ought to explain a little more than that, because that really sounds weird.
We've talked to him twice this year about this semi-legendary prop bet that you and Jeff Madsen and Seebach got involved in at the L.A. Poker Classic earlier this year.
Right.
In fact, we had Joe on the show again at the beginning of the World Series this year, and he still had not gotten the tattoos. So the bet was whoever went out first had to get the other two guys' faces tattooed on his body. Whoever went out second had to get the other guy's face tattooed on his body. And whoever won it had the glory of having his face on the other two guys' bodies for however long it takes to sign up a guy with a laser. So has Seebach followed through yet?
Seebach has not. But Seabach, he's actually got like contacts and whatnot in the industry and whatnot. And I believe he's in talks for them to do it on LA Inc., which is, I guess, it's a show on MTV or somewhere like that.
Reality show, yeah.
Yeah, it's a, yeah, that. So I guess like overall for Jeff, Joe, and myself, for really, I guess, for poker a little bit, you know, if we were able to do it on the show and get a little exposure, I think that's probably a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we were supposed to do it in May, but then Kat Von D had to do something, so she couldn't do it. My guess is that we're going to be doing it pretty darn soon.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's about time. He's got to get it done.
You're not calling Madsen up every day and saying, where's my face?
I should, actually, because Madsen is a little bit of a jerk. So I should actually nail him. And just I should actually let him make him let me tattoo it on myself.
Oh, yeah, that's what they're going to do.
Double you get to pick the spot.
Double or nothing lasts longer. I get to actually do the tattoo. That would be cool.
How much to let him out?
Seabach, 20,000.
Yeah, well, that's not bad.
20,000 because that's what I paid. That's what I paid him to get out of wearing the court jester's suit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
that's not too bad.
What about Madsen? He still has
20,000
for him too.
Yeah, because I'd love to see him pay. He's a little cheapskate.
Now, while we're talking about prop bets, any prop bets this year at the World Series or other anything since then?
No, not really. Not anything that I think of. This year was a really neat year because the last 2 years I sucked badly, and just had a terrible World Series and whatnot. And I had made bets. And I hadn't done everything correctly. You know, I didn't get enough sleep. I drank too much. I goofed off. I don't feel like in 08 or 09 I gave an honest effort. I think I half-assed it. I think somewhere in my head started thinking that I was better than I am, and I could win at 70%. And you can't beat these guys at 70%. There's just too many good players nowadays. So going into this World Series, I made a commitment to myself, a couple of things. One, I committed that I wasn't going to cloud my head with prop bets. I wasn't going to do any. I wasn't going to bet on whether or not somebody else could win a bracelet or whether I could win a bracelet or who would win more money or anything. I wasn't going to – my focus was going to be on playing my best every day. And I did a commit. I mean, I also made a commitment that I wasn't going to drink and I wasn't going to party and I wasn't going to – you know, and I was going to get a good night's sleep and I was going to – give an honest effort. So that's what I did.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And you're wearing a bracelet.
No, I'm not wearing it.
But you own one.
Sorry.
My brother's wearing a bracelet.
A bracelet. Yes. All right. No problem.
You get a lot of sleep. Your brother gets a bracelet. Okay. Well, that's not bad.
Well, you sort of allude to it there when you say about poker and the different discussion there. You know, is Helmuth good for poker? Is some of these blow-ups, like a Mike Mansell blow-up, is that good for poker? Is any news good for poker, or does it have to be good news?
Well, somebody famous, I don't know who it is, once said, you know, that the next best thing to good press is bad press.
Well, yeah. Right?
And I think that is true in some respects. I think Helmuth is fantastic for poker.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mattisau is fantastic for poker. I think that these guys can be idiots, and that is great for poker. I think stupid prop bets are great for poker. I think the news that's not good for poker is cheating.
Oh, absolutely, 100%.
Is like those scandalous things. That is the part that – so I don't think that all news is good because mm-hmm. that stuff is, but I think all news about people being jerks and idiots and goofs or whatever, mm-hmm. I think that's great. I watched Helmuth that entry, and I laughed. Like, I laughed so hard, and mm-hmm. I thought, this guy is just the best thing I've ever seen. I mean, if anybody who doesn't think Phil Helmuth is the greatest thing in the world for poker is delusional, because he is fantastic.
You don't think it turns the game into a little bit of a joke that some people who aren't familiar with poker will look at that and go, what is this? Who is this clown?
Well, even if they do, they're still talking about poker.
You know what I think is more likely? I think it's more likely that somebody who's not familiar with poker says, what is this clown? I want to find out about it. Mm. And then goes and looks
there
into
it. Yeah.
And I think that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I don't really like love, and I kind of started it, I think that people can't get their own material now, and they keep stealing from old G. But like this Batman dude coming in dressed up as Batman.
Yeah.
I mean, why do these guys dress up like that? I mean, like, yeah, we did it. We did it as a bet, and it was kind of stupid and everything. But now everyone's just sort of latching on and doing it themselves, and they think it's funny.
Yeah.
It's not funny.
There was a guy dressed,
funny when we do it.
There was a guy dressed on 1C as Chris Jesus Ferguson.
Yes.
He had the cowboy hat.
That was pretty funny.
He had everything.
He looked a lot like him. And he really did.
My favorite part of it was I was standing talking to some other players, and I had seen him, and he was standing behind me. We're back to back. Mm-hmm. And I hear a woman come up to him and kind of meekly say to him, "Jesus, would you sign my breasts?" Which, by the way, may be the first time that sentence has ever been said.
No, no. I believe that shortly before being hung on the cross, Jesus signed some breasts.
It's entirely, yeah, Son of God. Yeah, it's entirely possible okay, that guys, happened, you know, 2,000 years ago. But in this context, the guy actually said, "I'm not him." And she then covered herself up, you know, pulled her top, not that she'd uncovered herself, but it was like she was showing some cleavage, and now she put her hands over her chest and pulled them up, and I thought, this is amazing. She would show her breasts to a famous stranger, yeah. But not a stranger who's not famous.
Well, no, she would show her breasts to Jesus because she thinks he can already see it. You know, I showed him anything, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
And by the way, the whole breast sighting thing,
yes,
it's kind of awkward. I mean, I don't have to do it a lot, but I have had to do it probably, I would say, I haven't had to do it. I've been asked to do it five times.
Yeah, there
times.
Is a difference there.
Probably, yes, quite a bit.
I mean, twist your arm,
I've probably
right?
been asked like five times.
Yes.
And it's awkward. You don't know what to do. You don't know whether, you know, you cup the breast to hold it up to do the signing.
Right.
Or whether you just
so you've been asked to do it five times, and you've done it nine.
Exactly.
Okay, just want to make sure.
And you know what? Those 30 days in jail were no fun.
Yeah, you didn't have to dot the I quite that hard.
That's an I? Oh.
WSOV bracelet winner Gavin Smith here with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris at the final table. We'll have more of that interview for you in just a moment. I'm sitting at table two at Harrah's St. Louis, where lots of tournament action is going on today, just like it does twice a day, every day of the week. There are tournaments starting at $40 all the way up to $60 and $100 and $125, and there's a $160 every Thursday night and a $125 every Saturday evening, and once a month they even have a $310 buy-in, an event that I'm proud to say that I've won once or twice. If you're a tournament player, Harrah's is the place to come and play. If you want to see the schedule, go to harrahs.com/STLpoker. Harrahs.com/STLpoker. And I would remiss if I didn't remind you about all the table games and slot machines they've got here and the great restaurants as well, from the Eat Up Buffet to Charlie Gito's Italian to the Range Steakhouse to the snack bars and all the rest. It's a great place to plan an evening out. If you have not come and played live poker or live in a casino in a while, make Harrah's St. Louis the one place you're going to come. Check that website, harrahs.com/STLpoker. For the schedule, and we'll see you here either on some Tuesday afternoon while we're doing the final table or some other time when Dennis and I are playing at Harrah's St. Louis. This is the final table on 590 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com. And subscribe via iTunes and get our podcast from thechipleader.com.
Dennis Phillips has flown over 100,000 miles this year to play poker tournaments on three continents. But he always comes back to St. Louis to talk about the game. Here he is at the final table with Paul Harris from Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Brought to you in part by PokerStars.net. Find the poker star in you. And now more of our conversation with poker pro Gavin Smith.
I talked to Gavin down in Florida during a charity event that we were both doing, and he was talking about possibly doing some stand-up comedic work and everything. And are you going to ever pursue that sometime? Because
yes.
I think you would actually be excellent at it.
I actually am going to try to do it. I want to do it very badly, and I almost was going to do it last year. I had everything in line last year to do it on the day between the November 9 and the Heads Up.
Okay.
And I had it lined up. I had comics lined up. I had Full Tilt support to pay for the comics buy-ins. I had charities on board. I had everything. We did. A friend of mine, Matt Palmer, did a lot of work on it. He was looking after sort of the business end of things. And we had it all lined up. And the problem ended up being that we weren't allowed to put Full Tilt signage up in the Pentola Theater. Mm. So once we weren't allowed to do that, then Full Tilt obviously couldn't get involved. Once I lost their money, then that took it. You know, Full Tilt was on board for a little over $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
which, you know, is a heck of a commitment.
Yep.
So then that, once that all fell through, the whole idea fell through, the whole show fell through. So, you know, maybe that was like a little much, but now I've had a bunch of people from like Hollywood people, you know, offer to help me do it in LA if I want and do sort of a similar type of thing. So I might do that, or I might just, you know, kind of do a little more low key and go to some improv thing. And
are you talking about you being an MC for a comedy night, introducing other comedians and doing some shtick in between, or are you going to work up an act?
A dream of mine has always been to actually try to do stand up. And I was going to come up with, but it wasn't going to be much. It was going to be like 5 minutes, you know. And that was what I was asking all my other comics to do, was give me 5 to 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just going to have this big show where he had like, you know, 10 great comics plus me doing something. And, you know, and when you walked in, I was going to have like all poker players being ushers and whatnot. So, you know, you might walk in and Phil Hellmuth would take you to your seat, or Eric Lindgren or Dennis Phillips or, you know, And then I was going to have, like, a silent auction out in the lobby of the Penn and Teller Theater. So, you know, get all sorts of memorabilia donated and whatnot. And it was all pretty good. It was a pretty good concept. It was amazing that as feeble a mind as mine came up with it, I think. But
I have a suggestion for you. Make it all for charity.
It was all for charity.
It was. Yes. It was still going to cost you $100,000?
Well, the $100,000, there was eight buy-ins. For the comics. My thank you for the comics to do that was they're buying into the main event where we were going to get video and have a montage and whatnot of it.
I see.
So that was just 8 buy-ins. Boom. We were going to have to fly the comics in. So that was going to cost some money. We were going to have some advertising expenses. That was going to cost some money. My goal was to have 100% of the proceeds go to the charities.
Yep.
That's hard to do. To do that, you have to get money to pay the expenses from somewhere, and that was where
I almost wonder, though, because you're using the buy-ins as, you could maybe bring those comedians in, you work through the WSLP, they might actually want that, to have those other people in there to be playing at the main event, to be able to advertise it, you're raising money for charity, it's another good PR thing. It might be, approaching them would be a way to get this funded.
Well, the funding was fine, I mean, as long as we could do the thing. The WSLP was on board, they donated.
Okay.
They offered to donate the Penn and Teller Theater.
Okay.
They offered to look after all ticket sales through their thing, which was going to be a huge headache. You know, and that was amazing that they were going to do that. They were going to give the comics all their suites and whatnot. They were going to donate the Voodoo Lounge for the after party and whatnot. So they were cool. The World Series were great. They offered a lot, but the problem was the signage, and you know, that's the whole online. The online poker debate thing, you know, in the United States.
Yeah.
Yep.
So,
which we could get into and talk about for hours.
Right.
But we have to leave cuss words out. So, you know, that. All right. Well, another thing. Now, we were down there, and by the way, just a little kudos to him. We were down at a charity event. He had the mic. He's running around. We're trying to play.
Where?
It was in Florida during the Super Bowl, not this year, but the year before.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the putt and par.
Right.
I can't remember what it was. We both do a lot of charity works. But he had the mic. He's running around. Greg Raymer was there. I was there. We were trying to play poker and not succeeding very well. But he kept us rolling in the aisles while it was going on. So a future in stand-up comic. I could see you doing that. I really could. That would be pretty interesting.
I've got a really good friend, Vinny Favorito, who used to host we used to do a show at the Venetian called The Real Deal. And he does his comedy show at the Flamingo, and he is like the funniest guy I've ever met. And he has told me that, you know, he used to do training. He's told me he'll help me train me and everything. So it is a goal. I definitely want to give it a shot, but I ultimately I'm fairly lazy, so I'm gonna actually have to do something. But I think I'm gonna start working on it pretty soon, and hopefully maybe sometime later this year or early next year, get up at an improv night or something and give it a shot.
Well, I will be proud to be an usher anytime you want to do it. How's that?
Fantastic. How good would that be?
Gavin Smith, our guest here at the final table, and it's Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris, and you have a lot of experience doing shows like this because you were doing Poker Road Radio, you and Seabach and a bunch of other guys, including Joey Stapleton, who's now doing the Big Game broadcast for
sure. Well, he is so funny and talented, and he got a great opportunity with him. So hopefully that all goes really well, and they get lots of seasons out of it. So he has a long term gig.
Let me ask you, since you know him and worked with him for so long, who is telling him all the stuff about poker that he's now espousing on that show? Because you know that Stapes doesn't really know everything that he's saying.
I believe. I don't know. I'm allowed to disclose this, but I believe that the poker police that is telling them this is Jimmy Fricke.
Oh, really?
Right.
So he's the one who's analyzing the hands.
Yes. Joe Stapleton is giving us the mind of Jimmy Fricke. Joe Stapleton is nothing more than a stunt double.
That makes sense. Now, speaking of Poker Road Radio, which you did for so long, you announced on one of your recent podcasts that you're done with that, that you're giving it up. You're hanging it up after, I don't know how many years you guys have been doing this in one form or another.
Joe and I have been doing radio. We started with the circuit. We went to Poker Wire. Then we went to Poker Road. And we've been doing this on and off for 5 years now.
One show a week, and during the series more than that, right?
Not one show a week. We do it from all the stops, which is actually even tougher, really, because when you bust out of a World Poker Tour event, who the heck wants to stay for the 3 or 4 more days?
Yeah.
You just want to leave.
Right.
And for the longest time, we stayed for the entire stop. And so we've done it for a long time, and it's a lot. And like for the World Series, to come in at 11 o'clock 3 days a week, you know, it wears on you. It's a lot of work, and it's a lot of time.
You know, people listening to us who have real jobs are going to go, oh, you have to be at work at 11 o'clock. How tough is that for you?
Well, no, but I mean, you have to come in an hour earlier, and then you still have to play 12 hours. Right. It's not like I'm doing just the radios. I'm actually playing poker.
Because the events are starting at noon every day, and you got to rush off and do
that. Right, I'm actually playing poker every day. So it is time consuming, and it takes away a little bit from your poker.
I was about to say, you were talking about being 70%. Well, I don't know what it is, but 10% of it had to be doing the radio show or something.
Yeah, it takes away a little bit. And, like, don't get me wrong. I don't want to sound like I'm ungrateful or anything like that, because it has been a lot of fun. It has been a tremendous ride doing it. I've worked with some of the most talented people I've ever met. Like, Scott Huff is oozing talent. That guy is going to be a monster somewhere someday for sure. He is just way too talented to be held down. Even Bart Hansen, who he and I had our differences. He was a great guy. He was a nice guy. He was a good time. Alan Najad, another one who's just, I mean, this guy's just so polished as a radio guy, and he is fantastic. Stapleton, hilarious. Even now we've got Jeremiah Smith. He's doing it. He's done it. I've worked with so many great people. I've done it with Seabock, who's, you know, a great friend of mine. We've had a wonderful time. It's been great. I've gotten so many fans out of it. We've got, like, listeners. It's been great for me for exposure. It's been great for getting my name out there, for keeping me in the limelight when I wasn't doing so well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been a big factor in me having a great deal with Full Tilt. I mean, I've gotten so much more out of doing the radio than I've given. But that being said, it's probably time to move on. I mean, I'm having a baby in November. It's probably time for me to pass through. My heart isn't in it as much as it was at the start. I don't feel I'm giving a fair show to these people. I think that they can get a better show out of somebody whose heart is more into doing it. So I think, you know, I think maybe now's the time that we leave and we pass it on, and we leave when we're at a high point, and somebody else will come in and do a great job.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. I might suggest to Poker Road listeners that we're still here. Dennis and I are still here because we have a commitment to our craft, unlike some slackers who come on as guests on shows every once in a while.
Exactly. Well, Paul, quite frankly, you know, you're a whole lot better at radio than I am, so you should do it.
Yeah, but I don't have a bracelet. There's no bracelets in radio. That's what I've learned after 30 years.
Why is Canada poker is so much more popular in Canada than even in the U.S.? The penetration up there, I've seen some of the market reports and everything like that.
He said penetration.
So,
all right, Beavis.
Okay, here we go again. But it is. Yeah. Why is poker so popular in Canada?
Well,
it's just unbelievable.
You know, it gets cold in Canada. It gets cold in Canada. So we're good at a few things. We're good at hockey.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, we're good at curling.
Yeah.
Those are cold weather things. Uh-huh. We're good at drinking. You can do that in the cold, no problem. We're good at sex, obviously. And we're good at poker, because those are all things you can do in the winter.
Okay.
And when did you start playing poker? As a kid?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me when I started. No.
No, I don't want to know about the sex.
When did I start playing poker? I mean, I played poker. Like, my dad was really, really into cards. My dad, he loved cards. So, and he was my best friend, so we spent tons of time together. My dad had his first heart attack when I was 8 years old. Mm-hmm. So, at that point, my mom went off and was the breadwinner in our family, and my dad sort of looked after us. So he did the cooking, and he did all that stuff. And he was home when I got home from school every day. So I'd get home from school every day, and we would play games. And that's sort of probably where I had my first sort of introduction to it. Mm-hmm. And then I worked on golf courses, and you go to men's night and golf courses, and at the end of men's night, you sit there and you play poker. You don't play Hold'em, you play like Follow the Queen and Chicago and all these stupid wild card games. But it's still the poker, and I played poker then. So I've been playing, more or less my whole life, really.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned you're having a baby later this year. Do you foresee a time where you're teaching your child to be a poker player?
Absolutely. I don't ever want my child to attempt to make a living playing poker. But I would love for them, all my children, at some point. That's a soap opera, by the way. But I would like them to have poker to be in their life and to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, if you teach children how to play poker, you benefit them in so many ways. It helps them in their school. It helps them in their social lives. It helps them in poker is really, really good for children. Mm-hmm. It makes them better at math. It makes them better at psychology. It makes them better at understanding things. It is a game that is really, really beneficial. They probably, in the first grade, they should probably have poker be a class.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'll go that far, but he's absolutely right. The social interacting you have at a table, the meeting of people from all wakes of life, the money management you have to do, the analyzing other people, which you always do in real life, whether you realize it or not. If you're a salesman or whatever, you're always analyzing the person sitting across the table from you.
Right.
And the mathematics of it. Absolutely. I could see a ton of real life experiences that come off of a poker table.
Too many second graders in this country can't get a read on the other kids in their class.
Exactly.
And that has to change.
Well, just think about it. If your kid learned how to play poker, he would probably get the best of every single marble trade he ever makes.
Yeah, because kids are playing with marbles now in the 21st century.
Did I just show my age?
Yeah, there you go.
I just aged myself on that one, didn't I?
That's all right. I was thinking immediately. Never mind.
All right, so if we're talking about all the benefits of teaching poker, why don't you want him or her to be a poker professional?
It's too hard. That's in a nutshell, it's too hard. I love what I do. I love the success I've had. If I could go back to 1998 right now, even knowing all the success I've had.
If you could tell that Gavin Smith what this Gavin Smith knows.
I wouldn't try to do it again.
Why?
It was too hard. The first, 6 or 7 years were, you're just constantly getting beaten down and having to get back up and getting beaten down and having to get back up. And it is a hard, hard life. Even like we were talking about earlier with Peter Eastgate, right? Who's quit poker or whatnot.
Yes.
With all the money and wealth and everything that he's got, it's too hard. It takes such a special breed of person to be able to do this for a living. And I just think that if you do it as a pastime, then you don't lose your love for poker. I think in a lot of respects, I've lost my love for poker a little bit. I don't love it as much as I used to. I remember when I used to deal poker, and I used to pay my manager $100 to let me out of the shift I was working so I could go and play poker.
Mm-hmm.
I don't love it like that anymore. I lost a little something along the way, and I think it was probably more fun when I loved it.
So even though you're a very successful pro and now bracelet winner, it's more of a grind? Because you have the obligations now.
It's an incredible grind, and it's just incredibly hard, and it's getting harder. It's not getting any easier. These kids coming up and playing are fantastic. They're really good. It's not getting any easier, and the only way you can keep up with them is if you keep working extremely hard on your game, and you have to. And people see the fun, and they see you getting the bracelet, and they see you with winning $1 million, but they don't see. This year, everyone's going to look back on Gavin Smith in 2010 and say, oh, he won a bracelet and he won $300,000 or whatever. Wow, that's so special. What they didn't see is the first 20 days of the World Series where I came in every day feeling like I was playing my best and getting my teeth kicked in and having to walk, do that walk of shame out of the room every single day and have to go home and just tell yourself, give yourself a mantra that you are okay, you are good enough, and you're going to come back the next day and try it all again. And people don't see how hard that is, and they don't. So it's the same with every job. Like people don't look at LeBron James, or people look at LeBron James and see all the glory. They don't see all the hard work that he has to do 365 days a year to stay being the best.
Yeah.
And it's it's not the easiest thing in the world to do.
Dennis, you've only been doing this for a couple of years. Are you feeling the pain here?
Oh, I know exactly what he's talking about. Let me tell you, especially when they recognize you at the table, and then you're the first one out of the table. Maybe you played great. Doesn't make any difference. You're out. You're getting up. You're walking through table after table after table of people, all of them looking, going, oh, boy. You know, and you just start wilting as you walk toward the door.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure.
And that grind of having to travel. I mean, you're spending way more time away from home than you ever did before you got into the poker world.
I said last year, 250,000 miles in the air. That was just ludicrous.
And the travel, which you have to do if you want to be in tournament poker, it takes its tolls on your family life. You know, it's very hard on relationships. You know, it's difficult. But, you know, that being said, I'm one lucky SOB.
It's still been a pretty good 12 years, even as hard as you make it out to be.
That being said, yeah, I am happy.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate you coming on. Good luck with the baby this fall. Good luck with whatever you're going to go on to next after the Poker Road Radio closes up shop, and continued success with your career, which we know is far from over. As bad as you make it sound, we know you're not going to Eastgate it. You're not going to give it up.
I am not quitting poker anytime, because when people sometimes say to me, you know, Gavin, you know, what's it like, you know, all sorts of having money and people knowing you and all of the bothering you and getting, which I don't consider a bother, by the way, bothering you for autographs and pictures, does that ever get old? And my answer to that is, beats the heck out of driving cab in 30 below.
Yeah.
I'm not going back to driving cab, so I'm staying in poker.
There you go. Gavin Smith joining Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris here at The Final Table. Get our podcast on thechipleader.com and join us every Tuesday at 3 here on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.